12. Apophania. Climbing the stairs, she realizes she's forgotten to do the bond thing, but she finds that recent events have apparently broken the spell of Asian sluts. It doesn't even bother her that she knows what's stuffed down behind the pile of magazines on the landing, as long as she doesn't dwell on it. More worried about what she may just now have gotten into. Walking him to the station, she's affirmed that she's up for it. They'll work for Big End. She'll go to Tokyo and find Taki. Try, with the help of Parkaboy and Musashi, to get the number. Then they'll see. There's no reason, he says, to regard it as a Faustian bargain with Big End. They'll be free to end the partnership at any time, and can keep each other honest. But this argument is somehow familiar from past contexts, past bargains, where things haven't really worked out that well. But she knows she's going now, and she has the two very black, very odd-looking keys around her neck, and right this minute she isn't worrying about the perimeter. Fuck Dorothea. Right now she believes implicitly in German technology. Which is about to create a problem, she realizes, as she works those fine locks in turn. She doesn't know where she can leave the new keys, or who to trust with them. Damien will want to be able to unlock his apartment should he return, and she won't be here. He doesn't have an office, no agency affiliation that she knows of, and she doesn't know any of their mutual acquaintances here well enough to trust them with the valuable and highly portable music production gear in the room upstairs. She doesn't know how constant Damien's email connection is at the dig in Russia. If she emails him for advice, will he get it in time and respond, telling her where to leave the keys? Then she thinks of Wojtek and Magda, who have no idea where this place is. She can leave one set with them, telling Damien how to contact them, and take the other set with her. And yes, letting herself in, everything looks fine here, even the nap on the couch, reversed where Boone had sat on it. The phone rings. Hello?
Pamela Mainwaring case. I'm travel for Hubertus. I have you British Airways, Heathrow, Narita, 10:55 hours, first class, tomorrow. Works?
Case stares at the robot girls.
Yes, thanks. Brilliant. I'll come round now and drop off the ticket. I also have a laptop for you and a phone.
She's always managed not to acquire either, at least in terms of traveling with them. She has a laptop at home, but uses it with a full-size keyboard and a monitor, only as her desk machine. And the mirror world has always been a deliberate cellular vacation, but now she remembers Tokyo's lack of English signage and her lack of spoken Japanese.
I'll be there in 10. I'm calling from the car. Bye.
Click. She locates the piece of cardboard with Wojtek's address and emails him, giving him the number here and asking him to call as soon as he can, that she has a favor to ask, and that it's worth a few ZX-81s. Then she emails Parkaboy and tells him she'll be in Tokyo the day after tomorrow and to start thinking about what she'll need to do to deal with Taki. She pauses, about to open the latest from her mother, and remembering that she still hasn't replied to the previous two. Her mother is Cynthia at roseoftheworld.com, Rose of the World being an intentional community of sorts, back up in the red dirt country of Maui. Case has never been there, but Cynthia has sent pictures, a sprawling, oddly prosaic 60s rancher, set back against a red hillside in long, sparse grass, that red showing through like some kind of scalp disease. Up there, they scrutinize miles of audio tape, some of it fresh from its factory wrap, unused, listening for voices of the dead, EVP freaks, of which Case's mother is one from way back. Used to put Wynn's Ooher reel-to-reel in their very first microwave. She said that blocked out broadcast interference. Case has long managed to have as little to do with her mother's penchant for electronic voice phenomena as she possibly can, and this has been her father's strategy as well. Apophania, Wynn had declared it, after due consideration and in his careful way, the spontaneous perception of connections and meaningfulness in unrelated things, and had never, as far as Case knows, said another word about it. Case hesitates, a mouse click away from opening her mother's message, which is titled, Hello? No, she isn't ready. She goes to the fridge and wonders what she'll eat before her departure and what she'll throw out. Apophania. She stares blankly into the cold, beautifully illuminated interior of Damien's German fridge. What if the sense of nascent meaning they all perceive in the footage is simply that, an illusion of meaningfulness, faulty pattern recognition. She's been over this with Parker Boy, and he's taken it places. The neuromechanics of hallucination, August Strindberg's personal account of his psychotic break, and a peak drug experience during his teens in which he, Parker Boy, had felt himself to be channeling some kind of linear B angelic machine language, none of which have really helped. She sighs and closes the fridge. The street door buzzes. She goes down to let Pamela Mainwaring in, a 20-something blonde in a black mini and tartan print tights, a black ballistic nylon briefcase in either hand. Case sees a blue ant car waiting in the street. Its driver stands beside it, smoking a cigarette, his ear plugged with plastic, conversing with thin air. Everything about Pamela Mainwaring is fast, efficient, and intimidatingly clear, not a woman who'd often have to repeat herself. They aren't even in the apartment yet before she's gotten Case to sign off on a suite in the Park Hyatt, Shinjuku, with a view of the Imperial Palace. "Part of one rooftop, at least," Pamela says, putting the briefcases down side by side on the trestle table. "That's a nice yellow," glancing into the kitchen. She unzips one case, exposing a laptop and printer.
"I'll just check this again," she says, booting up. "You can use the return whenever you like and on any carrier, but you can also go anywhere you want, any time. My email and number's in your laptop here. I do all of Hubertus's travel, so I'm 724.
The screen fills with a dense freeze of flight schedules.
"Yes, you're on."
She takes blank airline tickets from an envelope and feeds them into the rectangular printer. It makes small, energetic buzzing sounds as the tickets emerge from the opposite end.
"Minimum 2 hours check-in,"
adroitly assembling the fresh minted tickets in a British Airways folder.
"We have an iBook for you, loaded, cellular modem. And a phone. It's good here, anywhere in Europe, Japan, and the States. You'll be met at Narita by someone from Blue Ant Tokyo. The Tokyo office is at your complete disposal. The best translators, drivers, anything you feel you need. Literally anything."
"I don't want to be met."
"Then you won't."
"Is Hubertus still in New York, Pamela?" Pamela consults an Oakley time bomb, slightly wider than her left wrist.
"Hubertus is on his way to Houston, but he'll be back in the Mercer tonight. His email and all of his numbers are in your iBook."
She opens a second case, exposing a flat Mac, a gray cell phone large enough to look either passé or unusually powerful, various cables and small gizmos still sealed in the manufacturer's plastic, and a sheaf of the usual glossy how-to. There's a Blue Ant envelope on top of the computer. Pamela closes her own computer, zips up the case, picks up the envelope, tears it open, shakes out a loose credit card.
"Sign this, please."
Case takes it. Case Pollard, EXP. Platinum Visa, customized with a hieratic Blue Ant, which, of course, is a Heinze creation, robotic and Egyptianate. Pamela Mainwaring hands her an expensive German roller point. Case puts the card face down on the trestle table and signs its virgin back. Something seems to clunk heavily at the rear of her ethical universe.
"It's been a pleasure meeting you," Pamela says. "Have a brilliant trip, best of luck, and call or email me if you need anything, absolutely anything."
She shakes Case's hand firmly.
"I can show myself out, thanks."
And then she's gone, Case closing and locking the door behind her. She goes back to the table and picks up the cell phone. She sees that it's on. After a few tries, she manages to turn it off. She puts it back in the case, which she closes and pushes to the rear of the table. Takes a deep breath, another, then does a Pilates spine curl, rolling down vertebra by vertebra into a sort of upright fetal crouch. Comes up out of it as smoothly and slowly as she can. Damien's phone rings.
"Hello?"
"Yes, Wojtek."
"I need your help with something, Wojtek. I'd like you to keep a set of keys and give them to a friend of mine if he turns up. I'll give you £20.
"It's not needed to pay, Casey."
"It's a donation to your ZX81 project. I have a new job and I'm on an expense account," she says, thinking she's lying, but then realizing she isn't necessarily. "Can you meet me in 2 hours where we had breakfast?"
"Yes."
"Good. See you."
Hangs up. And wonders for the first time, and indeed for the first time in her life, whether the phone is tapped. Could that be what got the Asian sluts invader in here in the first place? Dorothea is an industrial espionage bitch, or has been, so it probably isn't entirely unlikely they do things like that. Bugs, spy shop stuff. She mentally reviews her calls since Asian sluts. The only one of any substance asking Helena about trans she'd made from a phone in Camden High Street. Now this one to Wojtek. But unless a listener knew where she'd run into him at breakfast, but then couldn't they trace his number, wherever that is? She goes into the room where she keeps her luggage and begins the pre-travel yoga of folding and packing CPUs, which somehow tells her body that she will soon be free of reliance on this particular perimeter. Completing these tasks, she lies down on the gray duvet and falls asleep, willing herself to wake in an hour in time to meet Wojtek at the bistro in Aberdeen Street, and knows that she will. And dreams, though she seldom dreams, or seldom recalls them, that she is alone in the back of a black cab in London, the transience of late summer leaves accentuating the age of the city, the depth of its history, the simple, stubborn vastness of it. Facades of tall houses, poker-faced and unyielding. She shivers, though the night is warm, the air in the cab close, and the image from Damien's email comes to her, wet gray pyramids of bone rising beside excavations in a Russian swamp. What was that, to do that, to the dead, to history? She hears picks ringing, drunken laughter, and she is in the cab, feeling ill, and in the pine forest, the summer swamp, witness, she knows, to some cannibalism beyond expression, some eating of the dead, and she remembers telling Big End that the past is mutable, too, as mutable as the future. But now she must tell him that it shouldn't be dug up, ravaged, thrown away. She must tell him, but cannot speak, even though she now sees that it is Big End who is driving this cab, wearing his cowboy hat. And even if she speaks, if she manages to break this thing that so painfully shackles speech, he is separated from her voice by a partition of glass or plastic, entirely bent on driving, driving she knows not where, and wakes to the rapid beating of her heart. Gets up to splash cold water on her face and ascend the steep, narrow stairwell to where she's hidden the second set of keys. And she will be careful in the street on her way to meet Wojtek. She has never before determined to try to discover whether or not she might be being followed, but now she does, and will. Somewhere deep within her surfaces a tiny clockwork submarine. There are times when you can only take the next step, and then another.